among the alder trees and pollards, a mile or more from the church. The man, after looking at me for a moment, turned me upside down, and emptied my pockets. There was nothing in them but a piece of bread. When the church came to itself, for he was so sudden and strong that he made it go head over heels before me, and I saw the steeple under my feet. When the church came to itself, I say, I was seated on a high tombstone, trembling, while he ate the bread ravenously.
"You young dog,"
said the man, licking his lips,
"what fat cheeks you ha' got!"
I believe they were fat, though I was at that time undersized for my years and not strong.
"Darn me if I couldn't eat 'em,"
said the man, with a threatening shake of his head.
"And if I harn't half a mind toot."
I earnestly expressed my hope that he wouldn't, and held tighter to the tombstone on which he had put me, partly to keep myself upon it, partly to keep myself from crying.
"Now, looky here," said the man. "Where's your mother?" "There, sir,"
said I. He started, made a short run, and stopped and looked over his shoulder.
"There, sir,"
I timidly explained.
"Also, Georgiana. That's my mother."
"Oh," said he, coming back. "And is that your father along o' your mother?"
"Yes, sir,"
said I.
"Him too. Late of this parish."
"Ah,"
he muttered, then considering.
"Who do you live with? Supposing you're kindly let to live, which I an't made up my mind about."
"My sister, sir. Mrs. Joe Gargery. Wife of Joe Gargery, the blacksmith, sir."
"Blacksmith, eh?"
said he, and he looked down at his leg. After darkly looking at his leg and me several times, he came closer to my tombstone, took me by both arms, and tilted me back as far as he could hold me, so that his eyes looked most powerfully down into mine, and mine looked most helplessly up into his.
"Now, looky here,"
he said,
"the question being whether you're to be let to live. You know what a file is?"
"Yes, sir."
"And you know what wittles is?"
"Yes, sir."
After each question, he tilted me over a little more, so as to give me a greater sense of helplessness and danger.
"You get me a file."
He tilted me again.
"And you get me wittles."
He tilted me again.
"You bring 'em both to me."
He tilted me again.
"Or I'll have your heart and liver out."
He tilted me again. I was dreadfully frightened, and so giddy that I clung to him with both hands and said,
"If you would kindly please to let me keep upright, sir, perhaps I shouldn't be sick, and perhaps I could attend more."
He gave me a most tremendous dip and roll, so that the church jumped over its own weathercock. Then he held me by the arms in an upright position on the top of the stone, and went on in these fearful terms.
"You bring me tomorrow morning early that file and them wills. You bring the lot to me at that old battery over yonder. You do it, and you never dare to say a word, or dare to make a sign concerning your having seen such a person as me, or any person some ever, and you shall be let to live. You fail, or you go from my words in any particular, no matter how small it is, and your hearts and your liver shall be tore out, roasted, and ate. Now, I ain't alone, as you may think I am. There's a young man hid with me, in comparison with which young man, I am an angel. That young man hears the words I speak. That young man has a secret way, peculiar to himself, of getting at a boy, and at his heart, and at his liver. It is in vain for a boy to attempt to hide himself from that young man. A boy may lock his door.